Welcome to Human, an Accenture podcast about workforce potential and the future of work.
We've spoken about the importance of bringing your authentic self to work and why building a truly human culture in your organization isn't just the right thing to do, but that it unlocks massive amounts of business value. We've also looked at the how, exploring what organizations can do to apply a human-centric approach. The topic of love can leave some of us feeling a little bashful, and it isn't often discussed in the context of the workplace. But today's guest believes that with the presence of love and leadership, any business can deliver extraordinary results. I'm personally really looking forward to this conversation, and I'd like to welcome Yetunde Hoffman. Yetunde is an internationally certified integral development coach who specializes in leadership transformation, business transformation, and implementing change. She's also a classically trained pianist who has cast 40 yards when fly fishing. She's a non-executive director sitting on boards across a variety of industry sectors, an international speaker, and author of the upcoming book, Beyond Engagement. Yetunde joins us from Hampshire, England. Yetunde, welcome to Human. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. Thank you. How are you?
I'm good. I'm really excited to be talking about the concept of love at work today with you.
I am too.
I really enjoyed your TEDx talk on the topic, actually. I found it fascinating. For our listeners, Yetunde, you've had a fascinating career. Can we start by hearing more about the kind of work that you tend to do with your clients?
Thank you, Genghis. Well, first of all, I just love nothing more than helping people and organizations get the very best out of who they are. And my work is really personalized by my whole life, which has been characterized by change, whether personally or professionally. So my company works with organizations and their leaders on how to drive effective growth change and culture change, and the way that you can align your people behind your agenda. So we coach individual leaders who are going through change, experiencing change, making change happen, and we help leadership teams to be less dysfunctional. In addition, we run group-wide leadership programs and culture change programs, and we work with organizations globally and locally. I also run a nonprofit organization, which is a social enterprise called the Enjoyable Life Series. And in this organization, we equip people from all walks of life. You know, it doesn't matter whether they're homeless, CEOs, consultants, whatever they do. We help them develop the practical skills to live their lives more enjoyably. And we do this through the power of storytelling. And in so doing, they come back to their work, they're more engaged, it helps their well-being, and we also raise money for charity.
Fascinating. And it sounds like you're perfectly positioned not only to talk about, you know, the power of showing love at work and how that actually unlocks potential, but also how that interlinks with culture more generally and your experience in implementing change. Mm. So I know throughout your career that showing love at work has been a bit of a focus. Can you help us understand what that means? Because both outside of work, I think we struggle with defining love as a concept. And I think when we throw the professional sphere into that, it becomes even more ambiguous. So in your experience, when you talk about the power of love, what do we mean by this?
You're absolutely right, Genghis. I mean, love and the whole discussion around love can be highly misunderstood because, you know, you hear it in songs, in pop songs, you hear it in poetry, sometimes also in religion, and people get a little bit, oh, we don't want to bring that to work. And you hear it in all sorts of ways, and particularly in the workplace, with a lot of push against sexual harassment in the workplace, and genuinely so, it can be seen as a dirty word and something that you want to keep out of work. But when you think deeply about it, what it really, really means, Genghis, is actually the ability and the willingness to see an individual for who he or she is. That person that's more than a means to an end. To be able to value that person, all of that person, that's what love is. And when a person can come to work, because, you know, organizations are people. You don't have organization if you don't have people. And a person is a head, a heart, and a gut. And if you're not able to really, really have a place where a person can be all of who they are, be fully accepted for that, then how can we expect them to perform at their very best? So love for me is fundamental to performance. It's fundamental to potential. And it's fundamental to really what makes the world better. And organizations are at the forefront of that.
Thank you, Yetunde. And I like the way that you positioned, you know, love at work as being the intrinsic value, or appreciating the intrinsic value of an individual. And often we get other synonyms thrown in the mix, like empathy, compassion, the ability to show that you're willing to listen. There's some interesting research from the Roffey Park Institute that found in their survey, 94% of respondents felt that love at work was either very important or important. But beyond feeling good and, I guess, the general consensus that it is important, what are some of the other tangible business reasons why showing compassion at work is the right thing to do?
Well, first of all, expressions and experiences and emotions like compassion and kindness, those are all features of love. You cannot be compassionate at work or at home if you don't have love at its root. And so when you come to organization, because we're human, and there's that, you know, science will tell you that at the very essence of us as human beings is a desire and a need to be accepted. To be accepted. And so if we can harness that in organization, and if our leadership and colleagues can harness that, then what you're able to do is unlock potential. And organizations, I mean, the competitive landscape is getting more crowded. People are trying to break new territories, new markets, new grounds, new different routes to market, anticipate what the consumer is doing. And it's going to require more creativity, a willingness to try things. And so when you're coming from that place in organization and in business, where all of your people, as much as you can, are treated from a place of love, then you unlock potential. And we know that potential is limitless. When your people then feel that they are valued and they are accepted and their leaders make that space for them, what you then get is higher productivity, greater loyalty. In the UK, for example, we have lots of studies around how we can make people more productive, how people can be more effective, how they can be more engaged. But the answer is love. So we'll move from a contribution to myself. When we're coming from a place of love in business, it means that we're less selfish. We're contributing to our people. We want the best out of them. And when your people know that you want the best out of them, it becomes easier to align them behind your organizational purpose and what you're trying to do. Because they know that you're trying to drive results beyond the bottom line. It's not just about money. It's about making them great. It's about helping them really unleash their potential. And so they trust you more. And when you have greater trust, it leads to a much reduced fear of change. And what are a lot of business school case studies about? How change programs fail. But actually, change programs would be more successful and they would fail less if there was more trust, because it will help more in better decision making. You will be more agile. People, there'll be less second guessing, less meetings to have meetings and so on. And the ability to nurture talent and motivate people to invest in their own personal development will be much higher. So I believe that the commercial benefits of really unleashing the power of love in organization and in business can really be extraordinary.
Thank you, Tunde. And I really like the link there to trust. And I know that later on in the series, we'll have a dedicated episode on psychological safety and fear. And I read somewhere that the opposite of love isn't hate, it's fear. Mm. And I think that really speaks to what you've just said, actually, around how we do this and the business case around showing compassion at work. So it sort of ties in with not just feeling like you belong and aligning to a purpose, but it tackles that fundamental fear of change. It helps you become more agile.
Absolutely.
And a lot of the different points you spoke there around nurturing talent, you know, ensuring that we have a more loyal and productive workforce, that seems to underpin a lot of what we've discussed around the benefits of a truly human culture generally. You know, and we have episodes on inclusion and mental well-being, and all of these different things all seem to point towards this unlocking potential theme. Are we missing a trick, I guess, by not focusing on love first and foremost? We've got these different well-being and inclusion and diversity strategies, which are great. You know, we talk about the reasons why large transformation programs fail tends to be because of a lack of adoption and buy-in. Is love the beginning?
Do you know, Genghis, I believe that love is the beginning. Love is the middle, and love is the end. you know, I'm a black female. I'm only 5'2". I'm from West Africa originally. I'm married to a German. But if you put me next to another person that looks like me, it would be wrong of you to assume that I am the same person. Some of my best friends would call themselves gay. And they would also call themselves a gay person who loves this and a gay person who's that. So for me, when we look at all this inclusion and diversity and engagement strategies and well-being strategies, at the surface, I have absolutely nothing against them. And in fact, I applaud them. But the reason why they're not consistently getting the results that they want is because what makes us beautiful as human is that we are inherently individual. And what glues us across divide, whether it's race, gender, faith, orientation, beliefs, whatever it might be, it's love, that one ultimate value, that red thread is love, and it's acceptance. So if we started from a place of love, then the challenges of intersectionality then go away, because it's saying that I'm able to speak up without fear of judgment or retribution. Whether I'm your typical white male advantaged person. So if you take a country like Nigeria, or even any part of West Africa, or even Europe, what diversity and inclusion means in one part of the world, or in fact, one part of a country might be very different to another. And you're not going to be able to cover every single element of it. So for me, love, people say love covers all, but I think actually it's the root. And when we educate ourselves to start from that place of, I see you first as human. I'm not looking at your behavior, but I'm seeing you for the beautiful human being you are, whether that's in the workplace or outside of the workplace. Then we have a greater opportunity and a greater chance of creating awesome results for ourselves, for our teams, for our businesses, and indeed for the communities that we serve.
It's also a bit of a, for lack of a better word, a glue, isn't it? Because we're always, you know, we're always trying to be more intersectional. We're becoming more complex in the way that we understand, you know, the different things that make each of us who we are, whether that's diversity in gender identity or sexuality or ethnicity. And I think actually the thing that helps you look beyond the labels, as you sort of said, it's that ability to value. It just comes back to valuing the human being for who they are and the potential that they can bring to the organization as well as a result. So I think it's a powerful sort of statement to say, whether it's a general culture strategy or whether you're looking at well-being or inclusion, that foundation of love is something that you need to start with. Compassion, empathy, being able to listen, taking away fear, that I think brings all of the different parts of the mosaic together.
Absolutely. And it also gives us, it challenges us to look beneath the surface, and it challenges us not to make assumptions, because one of the problems we have at times in the world of work, and it's going to get even worse as we step into the future. And then again, when you take more stressful oriented professions like finance, where the demands are even heavier, there's a tendency to lead with labels, to lead with my status, my level, my, you know, the image I want you to have. But what happens is that we relate as human beings. And what love gives you the opportunity to do is to lead first with being human and then the label second, because organizations have hierarchy. You've got a job to do. Of course, you've got to do that. But when you come from a place, first of all, is you and me were human beings. And then we've got to relate as human beings. And then together we've got a job to do. Then you have a greater chance of creating the results that you want. And if I can share with you two stories that point to that. Not too long ago, in fact, about eight, 9 months ago, my company was invited to consult with an organization on how to enable more collaboration between their various minority interest groups in their company. So they had interest groups. They had their BAME group, the Black and Minority Ethnic Interest Group. They had their LGBTQ interest group. They had their faith interest groups. They had their women. They had their menopausal women. And they had so many. So on the surface, you think, oh, wow, this is a progressive organization. But the challenge they were facing was there was no collaboration across those groups. And secondly, they had people in their business saying, well, which group do I join? Because I'm Black and female and disabled and I'm gay. So where do I go? So the first, I can't say who the company is, but the first thing we had to say to them was, we're unable to help you because the problem is not your provision of creating the opportunity for these special interest groups to come together. Your problem is you're not quite addressing the fundamental issue, which is cultural. So that's the first thing. And the second story I will share is that when I was in my executive career, I was the only Black person in the top leadership cadre of about 200, one. And secondly, I was one of only five women in the top 200 or top 250. And we're going for a global leadership conference in a part of Europe. And one of my male colleagues, who was very popular, driving a big part of the business, been in the organization a long time, full of confidence, comes into my office and he says, oh, Yetunde, what do you think about going for this conference? And I thought, oh, I'm not really looking forward to it. It's going to be all people drinking, talking rugby and all of that. And I'm not sure I want to be part of it. And he said to me, really, Yetunde? You're usually the life and soul of the party. And I said, how about you? And so he turns to me, he said, listen, in all the years I've been working here, he said, I've had to swat on football, on rugby, on golf every weekend before showing up at the leadership meeting. He said, when all I just want to do is I want to talk about the ballet and I want to talk about theater, and it's just not accepted. So this is a classic example of people being forced to behave in a certain way in the workplace so that they can be fitted in into certain norms, as opposed to being, hey, come as you are. So you're a guy, you're in your 50s, you're very successful, and you love ballet. Who cares? Speak up. But when you are having to spend hours swatting up on stuff that you don't enjoy so that you can fit in, your potential, your energy, your resources are diverted. And that's costing the bottom line. That's costing money in organization.
And also costing efficiency, right? Because I'd like to touch on both those stories, actually. I think I can relate to parts of both. So in your first story around, you know, being asked to help this organization that had all of these different, you know, employee network group type offerings. I think fundamentally what you were saying here is that the core that we're talking about, that coming from a place of compassion and love and connectedness, that's not showing. And I think where I've seen this work really well, actually, at Accenture, as a gay man myself, I was at the Pride Parade in London last year. I've been going for the last 3 years. And I remember last year seeing a straight colleague who I knew had a female partner just joining with us and actually celebrating the event with us. And it was that sense of him demonstrating acceptance of me and the parade that actually meant more to me, because it it's important for us to have our sort of individual safe spaces, you know, spaces for the LGBT community, spaces for people who are Black or ethnic minority. But when you see that you get that core compassion in the workplace, where people who don't necessarily identify as belonging to any of those groups are showing support and I guess loving you for who you are, that's where it's most empowering. And I actually never, I've never forgotten that image of sort of seeing him there and being surprised and him just being so comfortable marching with us. So yeah, I think that I strongly agree with your sentiment around love not only being the sort of the foundation to any culture change, but also how you can sort of connect these different and various network groups, employee network groups that are important.
Absolutely. And Genghis, you know, leadership is relational, and leaders in organization have a fundamental obligation to demonstrate love. In fact, I believe this is the most critical leadership capability, because I mean, the example that you gave, see how it made you feel. And when you feel accepted, when you feel welcome, when you feel included, then it's amazing. You find yourself walking tall. And if organizations are full of employees, whether it's Accenture or the companies I've worked in, when your employees are walking tall psychologically, it's amazing. They'll go above and beyond for their clients. They'll go above and beyond for themselves. And helpfulness, being helpful in organization, is critical. And when you feel valued, you want to help your colleagues win. And when you help your colleagues win, you help your clients win, and you help your customers win.
And actually, it encouraged me to be more intersectional and you know, think about how I can support groups that are different to, you know, the boxes on the form that I identify with. And particularly, I think, because this was, you know, a straight white male, I also found myself really beginning to challenge some of the narrative around, you know, diversity as being something just for people who are diverse, right? And the need for everybody to be brought onto the journey, and the need for celebrating great examples of allyship.
Absolutely.
This is such an important topic, and especially during this time of uncertainty and disruption. So we've decided to release this episode in two parts. So do make sure you've subscribed to Human, Unlocking Workforce Potential, so that you don't miss part two. I'm Genghis Besim. Thank you for listening.